Hello. Will you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, I'm Heidi Gaiman, and I have a PhD in religious ethics, and I'm interested in the idea of humane leadership.
Very good. And where did we meet?
We met at the Oregon Extension, which is a tiny off-campus college program in the Cascade Mountains of Southern Oregon that is focused on a kind of holistic educational process that has some similarities to the idea of being whole persons no matter what context you're in, whether it's work or school or just being part of a community.
Mm-hmm. And is that what, that experience at Oregon Extension, is that what kind of makes you interested in humane leadership, or can you tell me about?
I think the experience of the Oregon Extension has confirmed, you know, my kind of background feeling that we need spaces to be completely who we are instead of being compartmentalized, and seeing the educational process of students who live and work and read and talk and think together has made it clear that when you're engaged on all those different levels, there's a lot more creativity and energy that happens. And so, that carries over into when you want to think about regular jobs in the business world that don't necessarily lend themselves to a humanistic or holistic way of being. You have the question of how can we make it more integrated into human life? And so that's very interesting to me, and the connection is there.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned in a prior conversation that you had done your dissertation on somebody named Iris Murdoch.
Yeah.
And can you introduce us to her and some of the questions that you asked of her and that she was asking of life?
Yeah. So most people might know of her as a British novelist because she wrote, 30 to 40, I think, novels. But she was also a moral philosopher and wrote some moral philosophy. There is, in fact, a movie called Iris that is all about her life, but unfortunately it's primarily not about her philosophical life, but about her life married to a British literary critic and she descended into Alzheimer's. So it's a very gripping life story as well. But she's an interesting philosopher because she was arguing against the very rationalistic approaches to ethics. Mm-hmm. And she felt that was really antithetical to how we actually operate as human creatures. Mm-hmm. And so in some ways, she took a phenomenological approach to human morality, which is to say, she wanted to look at how we actually work as human beings and then talk about the moral life from that perspective. And so her argument was, whatever we say about human morality, it has to resonate and be true to how we actually function as moral creatures. Mm-hmm. So she took that approach to ethics. And she had a couple of very distinctive claims about the moral life. And one was that it is incredibly difficult for human beings to change, and in particular to change to be morally better than they are. Hmm. But that's what she was interested in. So she wanted to take seriously the fact that we all have what she called the fat, relentless ego. And for her, that meant most of our motivation is driven by self-preservation and self-enhancement, and that we're naturally geared to be self-protective in that way, and that made us see the world in a skewed way. That is to see the world, any situation, any relationship, any workplace environment, from the perspective of how am I going to protect myself here, or how am I going to get what I want and need.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said the primary moral work for human beings is to try to see the world outside of that egoistic perspective. And that required what she called attention, which is a very basic, normal word, but it's been used by a few other philosophers. For example, Simone Weil, a French philosopher. The idea of attention, meaning that we have to actually try to see the world. It doesn't naturally come to us because, again, we have these filters on. And she felt like if we can attend to individual realities outside of ourselves and really see them just as valuable in and of themselves, that was the true way to see them. And distinctively so, she said, we have to focus on individual human beings because each individual human being is a unique creature. And we can't just go around looking at everybody saying, well, I know who these people are, they're driven by their own motives, and now I'm going to treat them, you know, just as competition or what have you. You have to notice individual human beings in their own right and value to, in order to be able to treat them morally correctly, in order to be able to respond to them as a human being. And so she spent a lot of time talking about how our consciousness works and how we need to focus our energies on stripping away egoistic impulses and really seeing human beings for who they are. And that would allow us to treat them properly. So it's a real, it's a claim that vision or attention is the primary moral act.
So it's intention. It's like intentional attention.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the primary moral effort.
Where does the intention come from?
Well, that's really a tough call in Murdoch because she doesn't have a huge role for the will because, again, she's just very negative about how we are driven by either external forces or our own internal sense of self-preservation. And she says it's small incremental efforts to shift our vision towards reality that gets us there, and it's a lifelong moral project. But she also says we have an internal motivation toward perfection in our effort to see the world. So she said the drive is not necessarily like will in the sense of I must see properly, I must understand this person properly, but more I want to, and I want to get past the things that are preventing me to see and understand what's going on around me. So she did say in one of her, she has so many great quotable phrases, but one is the simple phrase of every moment counts. Every moment of wherever your attention is directed counts.
Yes.
Every moment shifts you in either the direction of being more honest and clear-sighted or being more driven by motives that, you know, will put a shutter over your sight.
Right.
So that's pretty dramatic. Every moment counts in the moral life. I mean, we normally think about morality as, oh my gosh, I'm faced with this tough moral dilemma. You decide and then you go on with the rest of your day. And she's saying, no, every moment is a moral moment.
Well, I mean, the implications of that are massive.
They are massive.
but in terms of, it's very, very interesting because this is, I have a number of questions for you and kind of parallels here. So I just came from a conversation where we were talking about, you know, so much of what I think about is self-leadership. And self-leadership is about intention and moving towards good.
Yeah.
Right? And it's, you were talking about moving towards perfection, right? And away from this kind of fear of the ego. The ego, if we're deep in our own ego, we're going to project onto the universe that everybody else is just out for themselves. Therefore, I must protect myself. Therefore, I must withdraw another, you know, behind another layer of walls.
Yeah.
And that's not the path forward, it sounds like. But that perfection reminds me of the impeccability that we were just talking about.
Yeah.
And really, if we choose to move in that direction, I can't imagine another source for that besides some positive warmth and affinity. You could use the word love if you were really that kind of a person. It's moving towards life with some love, towards other. Wow, I'm interested in you.
Yeah.
Who are you?
Well, in fact, another quotable phrase from Murdoch is that you only see the things you love. You can only truly see the things you love. And she is a philosopher who talks about love as a necessary component of understanding reality outside yourself.
Right. So is a humane leader a leader who loves the people and the things that we can do together? I don't know.
I mean, I think the
Seems
word
like.
love is a little hard to
Yeah.
use in that context. But if you think about it in a more universal sense of wanting to be a person in a world where connections and relationships enhance the good, then, you can think about love coming out of you towards everything without saying, yes, I have to love my coworker. That sounds a little strange.
Right, yeah, I'm talking about that deeper, kind of
Yeah.
more philosophical level.
Yeah, I
It,
mean,
and it
I.
could turn into loving, your coworker, or at least loving the values that you share. I think that's the kind of the start with why idea is let's talk about what we value and why we're doing this at all.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so interesting to me, economic, if you go back down to economics, it's about business is about creating goods and services. Goods. We're just trying to make something good in the world, whether it's a phone or a glass of water or whatever.
Yeah.
Criminal justice is just trying to make something good happen. And leadership is just two people trying to make something good happen. Even if you have a criminal mind, if you're a criminal leader, you think it would be good to steal from people. So let's do that effectively, right? And of course, it comes into our moral
Yeah.
judgment. They're not doing that out of love for their fellow human. They're doing it out of love for money or love for power or something.
Right, and for, as for many ethicists in the 20th century did not necessarily want to make any kind of argument for an objective good towards which we were supposed to aim our moral life because they wanted to say it was more individual. And then you get into the problem of, what about the good gangster or what have you. Murdoch is somewhat of a Neoplatonist because she believes in the idea, the objective idea of the good, which she capitalizes, as somehow out there and beyond anything we can really create or even understand or see in the sense of actual vision, that we only see glimpses of the good in concrete individual reality. But because the good is there, she said there's a magnetic force to the good, and it's linked to this internal drive to perfection. And that if we want to become fully and truly human, we're going to be guided by certain ideas of the good that are out there and that are distinct from what we decide to construct as our own.
Right. That's beautiful. And for me, it reminds me that as humans, we have to find what works. I think you mentioned that. We're going towards what works for us as human beings. So, will we ever come to an agreement about whether or not Plato was right and that good exists outside of us and outside of our own judgment? I'm not sure it matters. I think I am a Neoplatonist as well, avowedly so, and proud of it and happy. And I think that believing in good outside of ourselves works for human beings. So that we can find a set of shared values. And so I'm very happy to say people who will work from that set of shared values, that perfection is possible, exists, and we should work towards that. I'm totally willing to live my life in relationship with them. Other people who say, no, I don't buy any of it, I want to be. Unfortunately, the other option is to end up in a fairly dark, lonely universe. If you follow the thinking all the way down, and I don't want to live there. We only have so much time together. And so, some humans want to gather, in the dark night of what the universe may be, right? If we think of it in a materialistic way. That we live in a dark, cold void, and we're just this little pale blue dot in the middle of that. There are some humans who want to gather around a fire in the night and tell each other stories that make it possible for them to sleep at night and get up in the morning and work together to feed the children. those are the humans I want to work with, not the ones who are always pointing at the dark.
Yeah, and that again is linked to the idea of hope and where that resides,
mm-hmm.
and how that not only motivates but creates a certain energy and possibility for working together.
Is that energy and possibility and hope actually possibly very close to the heart of what a humane leader holds and their role in the organization?
I'm not sure. I'm going to attend the conference and find out.
Well, that is one of the great questions we will ponder.
Yeah.
I am, just so everybody's very clear, I'm not convinced that I know I don't have any answers. I don't know if we will ever have any answers. But what my hope is that we get together, we have a wonderful, stimulating time wrestling with these questions and finding experiments that we can try in our own lives that make our own lives better.
Yeah.
More effective, more satisfying, more fulfilling. And maybe if we do that, others will see and start gathering around and start contributing their ideas and saying, hey, guys, you want to try this experiment? Let's try it this way. And we all start sharing our experiences and our experiments and our questions, and we start spiraling upwards.
Yeah.
So I think that you were talking a little bit ago about, you know, either you're kind of going up towards this perfection or not. And I was talking earlier today about, to me, it seems like we have, when it comes to self-leadership, this tipping point that we live in every moment, where one side says, here's my intention, here's my attention, here's my good goodwill and my impeccability. I'm going to just do 2% more than I did a few moments ago. And that leads to this spiraling upward of empowerment and possibility and hope and energy and connection. The other option is, I'm going to have the extra cookie, even though I know it, I don't feel good after that. And then you start spiraling downward into cynicism and lack of faith in yourself and everything else, and you start spiraling down towards a much darker place.
Yeah.
And really, literally, this is a balancing point where we can transform our path in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Or in this moment.
Right.
And it's just like Iris was saying about attention.
Yeah. I think another component of that is the idea of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And because creativity, you know, that what you described as that tipping point, it seems like creativity is not possible when you're just giving in and spiraling down.
Mm-hmm.
And Murdoch, in fact, compares art and the moral life, because she says in great art, a person isn't just creating a piece of art out of nothing and connected to nothing. A great artist is trying to represent reality in a unique and creative way that gives us insight into truth or reality. Mm-hmm. Again, so again, she's always focused on, we need to see clearly, we need to see the truth, we need to try to connect with reality. And she describes great art as doing that. And so the moral life, similarly, is not just about, you know, plodding through life and doing what's required or barely living up to, you know, things you're told to do, but it involves attention and therefore then creating a vision of what it means to live the good life.
Mm.
Like what, you know, a moral act, steal or don't steal, that's not very creative. But really attending to another human being and thinking creatively about, well, maybe they're behaving this way because of X, or maybe if I responded in some totally different way, they would respond back and there would be some kind of energy created.
Mm-hmm.
That for her, creativity is part of the process of attention. It's not separate from it. And the idea that we're at a tipping point and the leaning towards really engaging and trying to think and pay attention to, you use the word impeccable, trying to do something different or bring something more to the table in a way that's connected to and gives insight into what's going on is part of the moral process for her. Mm-hmm. So maybe part of being a humane leader is allowing creativity into the mix. And sometimes creativity is antithetical to business goals. So it can be a risk.
Yes, it can be. It can be. But that's a leader's job, is to balance all of that. Is to, absolutely, I agree with you. It's you're tying into so many things. We could go on for hours here. This is really, to me, very, very interesting. Because I think creativity is at the core of leadership.
Yeah.
And the core of what we uniquely can do as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And
for her, creativity, again, it's responsible to reality.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, again, some guidance. Creativity doesn't have to be a crazy, messy process, and it can be. But the end result is supposed to be responsible to reality, to bring something to light where you go, oh, I never saw it that way before. Right. And again, works of art can do that. Just some kind of brainstorming meeting approach where somebody says something and it seems to just perfectly click.
Yes.
That's the sort of resonance that Murdoch thinks we feel when we are really paying attention and we're creatively trying to understand a situation. Those kind of aha moments are signs that we're doing it right, that we're being right. Honest, or we're being faithful to reality.
And those are signs of great leadership. Insight, creative solution.
Mm-hmm.
One of my very favorite phrases, which is aesthetic arrest.
Mm-hmm.
Which is that experience you have when you see a piece of art or hear a piece of music and everything stops.
Yeah.
And you are touched at some deeper level you may not have even remembered existed. And that to me is a sign that you are on the right path. And frankly, that's what I'm after with all of this work, is how true can we be?
Yeah.
How much time can we spend in that state together?
Yeah. And the idea of that moment where you didn't know something existed and it's made visible to you, I think that's important to keep that. There's always more to be discovered.
Yes.
And so again, that's where creativity comes in. A lot of these words that you've used are out there in the world of business and leadership. But how do you kind of bring them all together and make it a dynamic process, a dynamic leadership?
Right.
That's not an easy task. But if you continue to think we're gonna figure out something new and different that's going to make the rest of us flourish here, that might happen.
Well, together we can try.
Yeah.
And it'll be a great process. Thank you, Heidi, very much
for
joining us here.
Thank you, Stephen.